Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Life is a ball game being played each day. Life is a ball game. Everybody can play. Yes, you know Jesus standing at the home plate. He's waiting for you there. You know life is a ball game, but you've got to play it fair.
Well, thank you, Sister Winona. Winona Carr. Gosh, I would have loved those song with her. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. This is Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD, hanging out here. And, of course, our executive producer, research assistant, Laura Cordner. Our engineer is Jake Bryant. Hey, have you bought a copy of Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol yet? It's a must-read for all listeners to 21st Century Radio, because not only does the plot involve all the latest discoveries in consciousness research that we've been reporting for or on in the past 21 years, but of course it also relies heavily on the research in my two most recent books, Founding Fathers, Secret Societies, as well as The United Symbolism of America. And as a matter of fact, right now my book is being displayed right next to Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol in all Barnes and Noble and Borders across the country. They are selling so well that they're going into new printings. And please support your local bookstores and go buy your copies of, I don't care whose books you're buying, but buy books. You can buy mine. You can buy Dan Brown's new blockbuster. But buy them from bookstores, from brick-and-mortar stores. Now, on October the 18th, you'll want to record the new Discovery Channel program called Finding the Lost Symbol, which features an interview with me and premieres on 8 p.m., it's 8 to 10 p.m., and that same documentary will also be seen worldwide that night on the A&E Network, where it will reach the international readers of my books that have been published in Spanish, French, German, Russian, Japanese, etc., etc., etc. October the 18th, Finding the Lost Symbol on Discovery Channel at 8 p.m. Don't miss it. But if you're in the United Kingdom, you'll have to go to A&E instead. Well, since 1991, I've been a student of Negro League Baseball and served on the Negro League Baseball Players Association board for the past 15 years. And during that time, I've had many mentors. Some were historians like Todd Bolton or Dr. Larry Hogan, but most were the players such as Buck Leonard, Max Manning, Gene Benson, Leon Day, and recently deceased Bert Simmons. But most of all, this hour's guest, Hall of Famer Monty Irvin, tutored my daughter, myself, and my family in our backyard in how to swing the bat and connect with the ball, something she, Zoe, and I were discussing just last night. And we're talking about this remaining part of the hour, the book Few and Chosen, Defining Negro League's Greatness Across the Eras by Monty Irvin and Phil Pepe. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, Monty Irvin.
Bob, I just want to say hello to you.
Yeah.
I think about you and Zoe and Anna all the time, and I'm just glad to talk to you.
Well, I am too, Monty. You know, we'll never forget that wonderful experience of being out in the backyard. And we used to call it Poop Field because all our dogs used to be there. Very small field. These were the great days. They really were. Now,
sure were, I tell you.
The day that Jackie Robinson was signed to a Brooklyn Dodgers contract was both a joyful and a sad day for the Negro League ballplayers. Why was that?
Well, we knew, realized that if he succeeded, then it was going to be the demise of, the league, because all the attention, of course, would be on Jackie. You know, if he was going to make it or not, and we knew if he made it, that the Negro Leagues would not be around very much longer. And as it was, he was signed, of course, in 1945 and 1950. The Negro National League ended. We knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Along with the owners.
Of course, that was really going to be changed. It was really going to change the economics in the black community for sure.
That's right, yes.
And so a lot of people lost jobs. A lot of people are out of work from that standpoint.
But it's progress, you know.
Yes, it was progress. Now, there are a lot of people, though. You know, Jackie Robinson obviously was the guy to do this, but there are a lot of people that I've talked to, and I don't want to embarrass you or anything, but they've been pointing to you for many years. They actually have said that, you know, they thought you would have been better in that particular situation, and I know you don't necessarily think that, but how do you feel about that?
I think about it sometimes, and I'm you know, happy the way it turned out. I wasn't, jealous of Jackie, but I just wanted him, a little disappointed I wasn't the first, but, it was okay.
Well, I think part of the possible disappointment is really dealing with, Jackie only played, he didn't play very long in the Negro Leagues.
Yeah, just a few months with the Kansas City Monarchs, that's true.
And you couldn't tell whether or not, I mean, suppose he could control his temper and all of that, but suppose he would end up batting 187.
That's right.
I mean, because it was untried, right? I mean, he was untried. So
yeah.
a real big chance was being taken there, and that's what would have scared me.
Yeah, that's right. It shows you how much Branch Rickey knew, if it had been me, I would have taken Roy Campanella, because Roy was tried and proven, and he's been in the league 10 years, and he could run, hit for power. He was just and had a great personality.
Oh yeah.
But with Jackie, the thing about him was that after he got the chance to play every day, he constantly improved. He became a better hitter, and in fact, he became a clutch hitter. He became very thrilling on the bases, and he was very eloquent. And he had gotten a lot of publicity out there in Los Angeles. So you would say that the Branch Rickey knew a whole lot more than we did, or I did.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and we rooted for him after he got the chance.
Yeah, didn't we all? It's just that of course I forgot to mention, of course, that Jackie Robinson was great in football, was great in basketball, he was great in a number of areas. Just like yourself, though, because
he's a great track star too, great basketball player.
Yeah.
And more than anything else, though, he was very eloquent. He's a good speaker, and had a good had a wonderful wife who helped him a whole lot too.
Rachel, yes.
Yeah, indeed. Rachel, and so I would say they certainly picked the right pioneer, as it turned out, and we're just delighted that he was successful.
Now, unfortunately, he died when he was 52.
Yes.
Yeah, that's if anyone else would have put in that situation, they may have even died younger than that. I mean, that was a tough situation to be in.
It was tough. It was tough, and he had to, he had to withstand a lot. And I don't know if, the trials and tribulations that he had, contributed to his passing so early. But it was tough. He was a fierce competitor, and it was a... And I don't think in his personality to do what Branch really wanted him to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, now your book. I love this book. We needed a book like this. We've had an awful lot of historians and other players write about themselves, but for a Hall of Famer who has had experience and knowledge of all these players to actually analyze them, that's what I really enjoyed, because there's nothing else like this book. The book, of course, friends, is called Few and Chosen, and it actually is the defining the Negro League's greatness and what goes through all the different eras, and it goes eras, not A-E-R-R-O-R-S, but eras, because there were a number of different eras in Negro League baseball. But your purpose in this book is to assess who the best players were.
Well, I told it as I saw it, and I played against or with or saw most of the players that I mentioned, and I just gave my best determination. And I hope that, I'm glad that you liked it, and I hope a lot of other people will like it, too.
Well, especially when you start talking about the best of the best and how you analyze them. That's why I thought, because let's begin with the catchers. And I've heard all kinds of ideas over the past 15 or so years that my limited experience here. You begin with the catchers' positions. Who were among, and you list five, who were among the very best of the catchers in the Negro Leagues?
Well, of course, when you mention catchers in the Negro League, number one, you have to say, Josh Gibson, I think.
Yeah.
Because he was one of a kind. He was a natural. Weighed about 100, about 2'5", 2'10". Run like a deer, had a rifle for an arm, and a right-handed hitter, and could really hit and could really catch. So I never did see Louis Santop, but I understand that Louis Santop was quite a great catcher, too. But I played for Biz Mackey. Mm-hmm. Now, Biz Mackey was a great had a great baseball mind, plus he was a great catcher, great receiver, knew how to set up a hitter, and so on. So I used to talk to him, and he would give me clues and points on who was good, who wasn't good, and the shortcomings and so on, but their strength too. So I came to the conclusion, of course, I was 17 when I first saw Josh, and I had never seen anybody hit and run and field and throw the way that he could. We became good friends. I remember way back in 1937 at Hinchcliffe Stadium in Paterson, New Jersey, the Newark Eagles played the Homestead Grays, and I got a chance to meet him. And from that moment until the moment both he and Buck died, we were great friends. We used to have a great, on the field, of course, we used to try to knock each other's brains out. Mm-hmm. But after the game, we'd go someplace and have a beer together.
Yeah, well, listen to this quote. I'm going to quote you on page 4. He said, the great Walter Johnson once said, there's a catcher that any big league club would like to buy for $200,000. His name is Gibson. He can do everything. He hits the ball a mile, and he catches so easy he might as well be in a rocking chair. Throws like a rifle. Listen to this now, friends. Listen to this. He said, Bill Dickey, who I've heard was one of the great catchers, he said, Bill Dickey isn't as good a catcher. Too bad this Gibson is a colored fellow.
That's right. I had never seen anybody, I saw a lot of catchers, but I'd never seen anybody do what he could do. Like I said, had no weaknesses, didn't strike out much. He's a great clutch hitter. And every league he led in home runs and batting average in every league that he ever played in. Mm. So I saw him for about 10 years, and I tell you, he was magnificent.
Now, you mentioned Biz Mackey, and of course, I think you put Roy Campanella as number two. Biz Mackey was the mentor of Roy Campanella, isn't that
That's
correct?
That's right, yes. Uh-huh. Again, you see, Roy benefited from Biz's experience and so on, and he was a student of Mackey's and a good one. Now Roy again had a rifle for an arm, but he great catcher, great defensive catcher, a great offensive, and again he knew how to call pitches, knew how to set a hitter up.
Mm-hmm.
So now Biz was a line drive hitter. He hit a lot of singles and doubles, but Campy, not only did he hit singles and doubles, but he hit home runs too.
He
so
sure did.
Yeah. So I would rate him as number two. He was outstanding.
Well, I learned a great deal in this chapter because I always could never decide, because I didn't see any of these players Mm-hmm. Monty, I mean, you know, I had to believe what other historians were telling me
all the time.
And I could never tell the difference as to who was better in regard, especially in regards to Bismacki and Roy Campanile. I didn't know their strengths and weaknesses because, obviously, if you watch them, and most people understanding Negro League baseball, they didn't have the kind of coaches and managers that you have today.
That's right. You had
other players teaching, or else they weren't going to teach you.
That's true. Yeah, the way we used to learn, if we would go to some of the our teammates or something, they might not know. So what we would do was go to a major league game and see how the big leaguers would do it, or we would through trial and error, or ask some of the playing against those major leaguers. Some of them were very friendly, and they would give us their views on how to do this or how to do that, and so you would learn from trial and error. And I tell you, you learn, and then as I mentioned, you learn a lot just by watching what they did and how they did it. You understand? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the major leaguers. And then we would compare notes and decide the best way to do it.
Well, the best way to do right now is to take a break here on 21st Century Radio with our final guest of the evening, Monty Irvin, Hall of Fame baseball player and author of Few and Chosen, Defining Negro League Greatness with Phil Pepe.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Brother Monty, but don't go away, because we'll be right back. As a matter of fact, it's published by Triumph Books. You can order it online at 21stcenturyradio.com. This is the book to get if you want to know about the greatness of the greatest Negro League players.
Talk Radio 680, WCBM.
For what we do, our health is a priority. To stay well or to recover from an illness or injury, consider using options that are safe, natural, and in some cases, thousands of years old. From modern-day massage, counseling, and homeopathic medicine, the Ruscom Mansions Community Health Center offers children and adults numerous health care and support services. Find out more about the Ruscom Mansions yoga classes and weekend programs. Call 410-367-7300. That's 367-7300.
This is Junior Ruth Stevens, reminding you to stay tuned to 21st Century Radio's Hieronymus and Company to hear more about my dad, Babe Ruth.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio with our guest, Monty Irvin, Hall of Fame baseball player and author of Few and Chosen, Defining Negro League Greatness with Phil Pepe, Triumph Books. And order it online at 21stcenturyradio.com. Well, Monty, we talked all about catchers now. First baseman. Now, there's a lot of names here. And we're trying to figure out who is the best. I'm going to give you the five names you list, and then could you tell us a little bit about them?
All right.
All right. Buck Leonard, George Giles, Mule Suttle. I remember Leon used to always say, kick, mule, kick. And
that's true.
Luke Ester and Bob Boyd. Tell us a little bit about these guys.
Okay, well, when you talk about first baseman, you got to say Buck Leonard because he was a. if Josh didn't get you, Buck would. You understand?
Yeah.
Left-hand hitter, again a natural, a great personality. Played with charisma and skill, and just loved playing. Never complained. Just a great guy. And what a hitter he was. He was a dead pull hitter. He always, for that left side, he'd always hit the ball to right field for the most part. Hit for very high average, and he was one of the best that I saw. Number two, George Giles was very fancy and could run. Oh, George could run and a great fielder. But you had to give Buck Leonard the better of it because he hit so many home runs and was so dangerous at the plate,
Mm-hmm.
And then, Luke, a lot of people saw Luke Ester when he played with, the Cleveland Indians. Luke, Luke was, you know, had a lot of power too, but he didn't hit for a high average the way that way Buck and George Jones would, you know. And then, you know, the rest of them, they played in the majors. Bob Boyd, you know, played with the, played, I think, with what the, what is Baltimore?
Yeah, Baltimore Orioles. He did
Baltimore
play
for Orioles for a while. Uh-huh.
He did well.
Yeah. And, you know, run like a deer, very quick, good fielder, but, you know, didn't have the power that he, that the men that I met, that I mentioned. So, to sum it up, I would have to say that, Buck was the man at first base, and if you talk to any of the Negro League players, they'll tell you he was the best first baseman that we had ever seen. Mm.
Well, you of course you also talked a little bit about their mule Suttles and
oh yeah, played with him with him in 1938, and great hitter. I mean, he had as much power as anybody. But he wasn't as mobile as the other one. He was, I guess, Mule must have weighed maybe about 215, maybe 220. Great hitter, but he couldn't feel and he couldn't, you know, get around the way the way some, you know, some, you know, the way these other that I mentioned. He, you know, didn't have the range, but at the plate he was tough and. He could hit a ball as far as anybody had ever lived.
Yeah, as you noted, one statistician discovered that in 77 at-bats in barnstorming games against major leaguers, Mule hit 11 home runs, which would compute to more than 80 homers in a 154-game season.
After when I first saw him, you know, he'd gotten a little older, but he still was a great hitter. And in the years that I played with him, he was very thrilling. He hit some monumental home runs, and he was tough at the plate. So,
okay, let's move on to second base. We got so many. I want to try to get as many of these in here so that we can educate our audience and a lot of people overseas that are listening, and from believe it or not, that are fans of the Negro Leagues.
Mm-hmm.
When we get to second base, you are looking at Jackie Robinson, Sammy T. Hughes, Newt Allen, Jim Gilliam, and Piper Davis.
Yeah.
What are
yeah.
the pluses and minuses of these great guys?
Yeah, well, everybody knows what a great second baseman Jackie became. He and Pee Wee Reese, you know, formed a wonderful combination. As I mentioned, Jackie became a clutch hitter and you know, hit for good average, and he was fast. Very thrilling on the bases, and he could bunt and he could do everything. Okay, but before I played against Sammy T. Hughes for a long time, and I tell you, it's too bad that he was older. You know, when the chance came, because we used to say of Sammy T. that he could drink second base. That's how good he was. He was about 6'2" or 3", and he was rangy. Very steady, good hitter. I mean, he was a home run hitter, and just a great guy, I tell you. And a lot of people, of course, would say that Sammy T. It's too bad he didn't get the chance earlier. You know.
Yeah.
Now those other guys, you know, Gilliam was adequate. You know, playing with the Dodgers, and of course Piper Davis. By the time he got the chance. Piper had gotten older too. Piper was signed by the Boston Red Sox. He played with the Birmingham Black Barons, and they never did bring him up. And I don't know why, because he and Artie Wilson, they formed a great combination for the Birmingham Black Barons. Played against them for a long time. All these guys were good. You know, came to the ballpark every day, showed up every day, willing, you know, ready to play, and really perform well. They were just fantastic players, and it was a pleasure playing with and against all of them.
Well, Sammy T. Hughes, he was also a Baltimore-like giant for quite a while there. Mm-hmm. And the other good thing you mentioned about Buck Leonard is he played for one team. Just one team,
Homestead Grays.
Homestead Grays, his entire, and that's 20 years or so.
Yeah,
that's unheard of in the Negro League.
That's true.
I don't know who else Who else could have ever done that? Well, let's now move on to the shortstop. Uh-huh. At shortstop, who would be, let's see your list here. The list you've got here would be Willie Wells,
yeah.
Pop Lloyd, Ernie
yep.
Banks, Dick Lundy, John Beckwith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk all about those guys.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, if you put them in a bag and shake them up, the one that came out first is the one you should select. But I played with Wells, played with him. No, saw him, and he was, they call him the devil. They say, don't hit the ball to the devil because, you know, you're not going to, you won't get a hit. Don't hit it through shortstop. He had the knack of, he played hitters, and he could come in on a ball, on those slow grounders to shortstop, then he could go back. He was one of the best I've ever seen. And going back and catching those Texas Leaguers on those balls that hit right over his head. A great hitter. Became a wonderful, you know, if you want to get him out, don't throw him a curveball. You have to get him out on fastballs because he was a great curveball hitter. And just a wonderful fella. Became a manager and a teacher for a lot of those, a lot of the players on his team and in the league. And then there was, we call him King Richard, Dick Lundy.
King Richard.
Dick was, again, you know, just a wonderful teammate, could hit, feel, and throw, you know, hit home runs too, played for a long time, you know, managed, and just a great baseball man. He's the first manager that I played on when I played with the Eagles. And he was really good. And he should be in the Hall of Fame, as you know, as Wells and these other fellows. Now John Henry Lloyd, I saw him. I was only about 9 or 10 years old when I saw Pop Lloyd. John Henry Pop Lloyd. He was so good until in Cuba, he played against Honus Wagner, and Wagner said it's to be compared to Willie Wells is a tribute because I've never seen a better shortstop, left hand hitter, and could really play. I just wish I had. When I first saw him, he had moved to first base because he had gotten older. He's about 40 years old when I first saw him.
My.
And of course, every year now they honor him on October 3rd in Atlantic City, they have what they call a John Henry Lloyd salute. It's a dinner, and I'm happy to say that I hope to attend that come next week. But so these fellows were all good, and all of them, of course, were just super and Hall of Famers.
Well,
they're all Hall of Famers. Question about it.
Was Willie Wells nicknamed the Shovel, or was that someone?
The Devil.
The Devil.
Yeah, the Devil.
Who was the guy that called the Shovel? That used to dig into the dirt to grab the ball. Let's not waste any more time on that. It's just something that came through my mind.
Now, when I saw John Beckwith, John was catching, but he also played. He also played shortstop and he played first base. And I asked, I only saw him maybe once or twice, but I asked all the, you know, the owners and some of the other players if John Beckwith belonged. They said, oh yeah. He said, when you name or talk about good hitters, you got a good hitting shortstop. He said, John Beckwith's name's got to be in this and near the top.
Well, we're going to move on here to third base.
All right.
Who were among the best? Well, you list Ray Dandridge. Hey, I think it's Ray Dandridge was the Shovel.
Yeah.
I think he was, yeah.
Okay.
And Judy Johnson. Listen to these. Jeez, Judy Johnson, Oliver Marcel, what a gentleman he was.
Yeah.
Judd Wilson and Henry Thompson.
That's true.
All right. Yeah. Tell us about these guys.
Oh, Lord, I tell you. Well, you see, again, I played with Dandridge, and I knew what he could do. Hello, you know, he's about 5'10", 11", and bow-legged, and you look at him, and you wouldn't think that he played baseball even. But then you went to the ballpark and you saw him play, and you say to yourself, how can anybody, you know, so short and stocky play so well? He was the best I've ever seen in coming in on a slow hit ball down the third baseline and getting it to first base. And no matter how quick he got the ball, he'd always get it to the first baseman and beat the runner by one step. That was his trademark. I played with him, on the Eagles, and then I played with him in Mexico. Hmm. Great number two hitter. Hit the ball to right field, and hit behind the runner, and of course fielding was his that was his strength. He could really field the ball, and then in Cuba they used to say about him. They would say, a train might go through his legs, but not a baseball.
Yeah,
you
know? yeah,
that's what they said about him.
Well, he
and then you know Hank Thompson, played great with the Giants.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But
there's this fellow that I really want our listeners to know a little bit about, Judd Wilson.
Yeah.
Tell us about him. Did he just get into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah. I think all of them are Hall of Famers except Hank Thompson. And he wasn't, you know, he led the league in, I think in 1954, I think it was, he led the league in assists, you know, a switch hitter, and, you know, played very well, and contributed to our winning the, the pennant, 1954, mm-hmm. and World Series. Another, just a major leaguer and played for 8 or 9 years. So they tell me, though, that Marcel, Dandridge, he became so well-known that Marcel was, they called him the ghost because he would come from nowhere and get the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And they said he was really outstanding. I didn't get a chance to see him, but all the players in the league used to talk about, what a wonderful third baseman he was.
Wow, what a all-star team, putting all these guys together, you know. I think we're going to take a break here.
Okay.
And we'll be right back with you after we award a copy of your book to one of our lucky listeners out there on 21st Century Radio. And again, and our guest is Monty Irvin, Hall of Fame baseball player and author of one of the best books I've ever read about the players that actually you get a really good insight as to who was great and who was even greater. That's the best way I can put it. Few and Chosen, Defining Negro League Greatness with Phil Pepe. Triumph Books. Order it online at 21stcenturyradio.com.
Frank Luber here, Radio 680 WCBM.
Next week on 21st Century Radio, can you think what is the connection between art, life, and UFOs? The answer is Bud Hopkins, the grandfather of UFO abduction research and a trained artist by profession. Art, life, and UFOs, Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM. If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at thesellingwell.com. That's thesellingwell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit thesellingwell.com or call The Selling Well's managing partner, Plato Hieronymus, at 443-939-1890. TheSellingWell.com. Well, how would you like to win a free 21st Century Radio library of books and magazines and other stuffs, including the Book of the Hour, Few and Chosen, Defining Negro League's Greatness Across the Eras by Monty Irvin and Phil Pepe. www.triumphbooks.com. Now, if you can answer this question, you might be able to take home that book plus 20 other items. And the question is this: in what part of the world are crop circles most abundant? We mentioned it many times last week. What part of the world are crop circles most abundant? And if you got the right answer and you're first, you're going to win, but you got to qualify. Here's how to do it. If you know the answer to this hour's quiz question on 21st Century Radio and you have not won from us in the last 60 days, call in now. 410-922-6680. That's 410-WCBM-680. First with the right answer wins. Prizes are available for you to pick up at the WCBM studios in Pikesville after Friday of this week. Winners have 60 days to pick up the prizes and must wait 60 days before winning another prize from 21st Century Radio. Good luck.
My name is Stanley Glenn from the Philadelphia Stars baseball team of the Negro National League. This is 21st Century Radio, and I'm very privileged to be in this spot.
Did you see Jackie Robinson hit that ball? It went zooming across the left field wall. Yeah, boy.
Yes, yes, Jackie hit that ball.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. We are privileged to have as our guest a dear friend, Monty Irvin, Hall of Fame baseball player and author of one of the best books I've ever read on the Negro Leagues, because he knows these players. He played with these players. It's a lot different being one of those guys involved in it than one of the guys just writing about it, because you're an historian. I know, because I'm a lowly historian myself. And what do I know about stuff like this? I didn't do it. Okay, so of course, what's the name of the book? Well, of course, it is called Few and Chosen. It actually is, it ranks the greatest players of all time, Defining Negro League's Greatness, Monty Irvin with Phil Pepe. And of course, as I noted a little earlier, and only 22 other times, Triumph Books is the publisher. Okay, Monty, we are all the way out to left field right now.
Before we proceed, can I go back to the third baseman just for a second?
Only for a second.
Yeah, Judy Johnson.
Judy Johnson, yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, I only saw him a couple of times. That was in the early 30s. But they say Judy, before Dandridge, they said, you know, again, Judy Johnson was one of the top players. And, of course, you know, he's a Hall of Famer and, you know, just a great, has great reputation. And they say he was one of the best. Good hitter, but didn't have the power that some of these other third basemen have.
Well, as you know,
just want to mention that.
Well, I'm glad you did, because he batted .339 in six seasons in the Cuban Winter League. They had some big parks.
Sure did.
I don't even know if they ever had a fence to the you know. I think that.
Yeah,
like there are 550.
Tropical stadium in Cuba. That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah. I don't know if it ever. You know, you just hit it and ran. Jeez.
Yeah, that's all. That's right. Unless you hit it over center field fence, the way Mule Suttles did.
Yeah, well, some of these, you know, a lot of people have been talking about the possibility of Mickey Mantle's 475-foot home run, and there have been instances, there's no doubt about it, that some of these players were hitting at 500, over 550. Out of the park in mm-hmm. regards to not just the Yankee Stadium, but in other areas.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm trying to think. Forbes Field. Forbes mm-hmm. Field. I mean, that was monstrous out there.
It sure was.
And,
yep.
and you had the owners watching these players knocking them out of the park when the Washington Senators couldn't even get it to the fence. So,
that's right.
Yeah, that really certainly could have changed everything. But now we're out there in left field, and you mentioned Neil Robinson, Minnie Minoso, Vic Harris, Sandy Amoros, and Willard Brown.
Yeah.
Tell us about some of these guys.
Well, Willard Brown, you know, another Hall of Famer, played with the Kansas City Monarchs, and he could hit and run and throw. Man, what a great player he was. And in Puerto Rico, you know, he went down there later on, and they used to call him Ese Hombre. I mean, the man, like they call
the
it,
man.
Stan the man.
Yeah.
He was Willard Brown the man.
Yeah.
You know, that's how good he was. And, of course, Neil Robinson, just a natural hitter, you know. and hit for a very high average. Vic Harris, great left-hand hitter. Didn't have the power these guys had, but he hit for a very high average. And you know, managed the, during that 10-year stretch, he managed the, you know, the Homestead Grays when they won those nine pennants in a row. He was terrific, just terrific.
Oh, you tell a wonderful story in here about Vic and yourself.
Yeah.
You want to run by a little bit? Want to give us about a minute of that, because that's a wonderful story, I think.
Well, yeah. Well, Vic played like, you know, he was tough on the bases. He would do anything. He'd spike it. Don't get in his way. So now I'm playing shortstop, and he's I had the ball waiting for him at second base, and he jumped. And cut me on the leg. So I said, Vic, if you ever do that again, I said, I'll take this ball and, you know, I won't be responsible for you, for your life. as it turned out, you know, we became friends, and then, I was in California visiting with Quincy Troop, a catcher, also, we went out to Vic's house. And so Vic said, Monty, he said, I just want to thank you for not, you know, hitting me in the head with that ball, because I'm sure you'd have killed me. I said, well, from now on, you better get down instead of, you know, jumping and cut me on my leg. So we became good friends.
Yeah.
And everything wound up just fine.
Boy, he was tough. There were a lot. I mean, you got a lot of tough players.
Sure, in
the Negro League, they played to win at any expense whatsoever. And I mean, you talk about more. It's as tough as football. Now, I'm going. If we got time, we'll come back to center field and right fielders. But I want to get to the pitchers because these.
Let me just
mention quickly.
Oh. I want to mention Oscar Charleston.
Okay.
He was a Willie Mays before. He was Willie Mays of his era. And then Cool Papa Bell, everybody knows what a great runner he was, you understand?
Yeah.
But now, I played with Willie, you know, about 6 or 7 years, and I knew what Willie could do. And he's the best fielding center fielder I've ever seen. You know, he hit all those home runs, too, but he could do it all. You know, I just want to mention that.
Yeah, right, Willie Mays, because that's quite a group. Listen to this group.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Mays, Oscar Charleston, Cool Papa Bell, Larry Doby.
Yep.
And Turkey Stearns.
Oh, yeah, all Hall of Famers.
All of them. Every one of them. I mean, they're mighty, mighty tough. But let's go down now. Maybe we can come back to some of the other fielders later. But we got to get to those pitchers here, because that pitching is key in any game, but especially in the Negro Leagues. I mean, you know, you had the best. You picked the best of the right and left-handed pitchers, and the right-handers you chose were Smokey Joe Williams.
Oh, yes, Smokey. They said he was as good or better than Satchel Paige.
Yeah.
Got a chance and never saw him pitch, but I met him after he retired, and Campanella and I used to go over. He became a celebrity bartender in Harlem, and he attracted a lot of people because he'd tell a lot of stories about, you know, his experiences, and what a great person he was. And, you know, I went to he's from a place called Seguin, and that's about 35-40 miles south of San Antonio. And his birthplace is a now national monument down there. It's a wonderful, wonderful pitcher. And then, of course, you know, Satchel Paige, what a legend he is.
Yeah.
Hit against him in 1938. It's the first time I ever saw him, and he had such a wonderful control, and he was extraordinarily fast. And if he said he was going to get you out, he would always do it. He was just unbelievable. Now, I was talking with Satchel. We were getting good friends. I talked to him. I said, "Well, who is the best pitcher, Satchel, that you ever saw?" I asked him that question. He said, "The best pitcher I ever saw was a left-hander by the name of Slim Jones." I said, "You mean Slim who pitched with the Philadelphia Stars?" He said, "Yeah." Mm-hmm. He said, "When a team would play the Philadelphia Stars, all the left-handers would get sick that day. They didn't want to come to the plate.
I like going to
school. They didn't want to come to the plate. And he died very early. He was tall. He was about 6'5". And when he lifted that foot, he was like halfway to home plate. So he was really outstanding. Of course, you know, I played with, you know, Leon Day, a right-hander. And I knew what he could do. Not only was he a great pitcher, I mean, very fast, had great control, but then he's a wonderful second baseman. He go in and replace your regular second baseman for defensive purposes and do the same thing in center field. That's how good he was.
Yeah.
Run like a deer and just a great fella. The only fault he had was he was just too quiet. He'd just go out and do the job. Come back and sit on the bench.
he was just too nice a guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Raymond Brown. You know, he was. Oh, what a great player he was. Everywhere he was, the MVP pitcher wherever he played. Pitched for the Homestead Grays for a long time, and I played against him in Puerto Rico for 4 or 5 years, and they loved him like a brother down there in Puerto Rico. He was so good. Magnificent.
What about Bullet Joe Rogan?
Bullet Joe Rogan. Didn't see him, but they told me about him. There was none better.
Martin DeHigo.
Yeah. DeHigo was a right hand. He was like just like Satchel. He was so good. He'd pitch and bat third in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And in Mexico, that's where he did most of his playing in the off season. They call him El Maestro. He was just
Maestro.
The best Latin American pitcher ever. You know, mm-hmm. just a wonderful and could play all positions except catch. He was just outstanding.
Well, you know, I just wanted to mention one other thing about Smokey Joe Williams because you know we're talking about him as a pitcher. Smokey Joe Williams, Ty Cobb himself said he would be a 30-game winner in the majors and is widely considered the best pitcher in Major League history. And Satchel Paige, of course, said the same thing. Just extraordinary. Now, those were just the right-handed pitchers to go up against. And then you go through the lefties, which you know are Willie Foster, Slim Jones, Roy Partlow, John Donaldson, and Barney Brown.
I played against all of them except Donaldson and one or two of the others, and all of them that I saw, Willie Foster was. I asked Charlie Gehringer, second baseman for the Detroit Tigers, one time. I said, Charlie, you played against a lot of those Negro leaguers. I said, who was outstanding in your mind? He said, "Well," he said, "the Chicago American Giants had a left-hander." He said, "We couldn't hit him." I said, "You mean Willie Foster?" He said, "Yes, that's him." He said he was really good. Well, I got a chance to meet him. He's from I think Tarboro, North Carolina, and he pitched batting practice for us as we came through there one year, and you could see, you know, that motion that he had, and that, you know, that he probably, and Biz Mackey said he was just one of the best. He was outstanding. And my other left hand, I didn't mention him, I don't think, in the book, but was Roy Partlow.
Yeah, you mentioned him in the book.
Oh, did I mention Roy?
Yeah.
He was great, too. Yeah. You know, came up late, but terrific, just terrific ball player.
Well, this is a terrific book, Monty. I am so sorry I didn't know about it till just about a month or so ago when we were at the Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Mm-hmm. We love their books that they have there, and every time we go to a game, we pick out one or two books, and this was just dynamite. You have done us a great service. Who else could have told us about the quality of these great players? It takes a great player to be able to talk about that kind of stuff, and obviously you've
proven. I compared notes with Biz Mackey, and he gave me a lot of the information. I mean, you know, the careers of you know guys, you know, some of the guys I didn't see, but I've I saw most of these. I saw 95% of these guys that I mentioned.
Well, that's the reason why this is such an important book, and we are out of time. Thank you for joining us. Please hang on, Monty Irvin. We'll see you next week on 21st Century Radio with Brother Bud Hopkins and UFOs.